It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, Charles Greenfield checks in with the new interim dean of the FIU School of Music, Dr. William Hipp, to find out about their exciting upcoming performance season. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and Jody Horn-Leschinski gives us her Broward County Arts Calendar. Now, contributor Judith Bishop speaks with South Florida's well-known and highly respected director and chief curator of Nova Southeastern University's Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale.
The Nova Southeastern University Museum of Art in Fort Lauderdale is located on Las Olas Boulevard in the heart of that bustling city. In recent months, there have been big changes at the museum since Bonnie Clearwater took the helm as director and chief curator. She made her reputation in New York as a curator of the Mark Rothko collection and wrote extensively about Rothko. Here in South Florida, she ran MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, for 18 years, raising the quality and profile of that institution. Now she's devoting her time, energy, and artistic vision to her new challenge in Fort Lauderdale. Bonnie Clearwater is our guest today on South Florida Arts Beat. Bonnie Clearwater, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. There's so much to talk about at NSU Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale, but first we really have to ask what's going on at your old alma mater at MoCA, where a very bitter controversy seems headed for bitter litigation. At the heart of the question is, who owns the art there, the museum and the board, or the city of North Miami? What's your reaction to all this?
You know as much as I do.
Oh, you must know more than you read in the papers. Did you see the handwriting on the wall? Because the art world was stunned when you left MoCA. People were buzzing. They couldn't believe it. Didn't make sense. Now it makes sense.
Well, I was at MoCA for 18 years and got it to an incredible position. And really, leaving the museum was one of the hardest decisions of my life. And the museum, NSU Museum of Art in Fort Lauderdale, had been persistent in trying to woo me up to take over the museum. And they kept saying, you really need to look at what's happening here. And I did, and was particularly impressed now that it was part of Nova Southeastern University, and that there was incredible opportunity. And here was this incredible building by Edward Larrabee Barnes, the star architect of his time, we should say. Building opened in 1986. In fact, I was there at the opening. And it, you know, had gone through many different phases, and it really deserved to be put on an international stage. And there was the resources, and now with the university, the desire to really help this museum become all that it could be. The space, it has 83,000 square feet, close to 30,000 square feet of exhibition space, and a 255-seat auditorium, and its own studio art school, the AutoNation Academy of Art and Design. So when I really started looking at it, I said, you know, this is a really great opportunity. And I was originally trained as a medieval art historian. So I've been in contemporary for most of my career. And the idea that I would now be able to expand beyond contemporary while bringing the past into the present was a great challenge. And to give it an identity, to use the great collections that it has there, it has unique collections that really define it on its own plane, and nationally and internationally. So it was an incredible challenge, and it was something that when I really looked at it, I said, this is something that would really give me a great opportunity. And in less than a year, I think we have already accomplished a good deal of what we were set out to do.
Well, people say that when you run a museum, that there's a twofer. Excellent art, but it's also a hip happening place. And when you were at MoCA and you're using the same philosophy now in Fort Lauderdale, your openings, your fundraisers are all high profile social events. How do you see the connection between the two? Is it PR Or is it fundraising or a combination of
both? It's all a combination. It starts with having great programs. You can't promote something unless there really is something that is going to be solid. And especially now, drawing so many people from Miami and Palm Beach and elsewhere, we have to make it worth the drive. And with our recent opening of the Miami Generation Revisited, I can say we were visited by most of Miami at the opening. And it was a really great event, but it was all about the art. It was about revisiting a landmark exhibition that the Cuban Museum in Miami in 1983 organized of the first generation of Cuban exile artists. And it was really a moment to celebrate that this was really the first group to create a community of artists in South Florida. And that from them grew this incredible art scene that we are now benefiting from. So it drew heavily from the who's who of Miami, drew Fort Lauderdale, who everybody was so excited. It started with a panel discussion with the artists, standing room only, on a Saturday at 5:30 in July.
That is quite an accomplishment. Absolutely. You've got something else going on, too. The antithesis, you might say, of Latin art. It's something called research and development. It sounds very techno, very scientific.
Well, it's got research and development concerning belonging. And it's a very experimental thing to be doing in a museum where we've turned over our galleries to a number of South Florida artists to use our galleries as their studio. And we're calling it research and development because the Nova Southeastern University is a university known for research. And this is the idea that artists, just like scientists or historians or doctors, need time to do research and development for their practice. But these are a group of artists who also are activists. And they're dealing with the subject of homelessness in their research and how to apply this and express it through their art. So we've been able to put them together with a faculty from Nova Southeastern University, which has an incredible multidisciplinary program. And they particularly have programs in conflict and resolution that are dealing with these kinds of social issues. So it's been a very interesting cross-disciplinary event. Plus, the artists are working with various community organizations that are serving individuals who are going through periods of homelessness.
Very interesting, bringing art to the community and the community to art. You have a big, big calendar coming up in October on the 12th, I believe. You're featuring three prominent 20th century artists, and you're calling it Cafe Dolly. First of all, tell us about the title and also, of course, about the artists.
Well, the exhibition was organized by the W.J. Williamson Museum in Denmark. Now, the subtitle is Picabia Schnabel Williamson. Now, I've worked with Julian Schnabel on many occasions, including writing a book on him, and I had included him in the show I did on 80s painting. And he told me about the show a little over a year ago, in which he was going to be with Picabia, the great early 20th century modernist, important pioneer of Dada art, and contemporary art. I said, oh, that sounds really interesting. I would like to show that. Then I find out that it's also with this obscure early 20th century Danish artist. And when I saw this work, I said, I've got to see this show. And I had to be in London to do some research, and I flew to Denmark for the day just to see it. And it was just mind-blowing that I had never heard of this artist before, but it turns out hardly anybody else.
This is Williamson.
Williamson. So the exhibition is coming to our museum. We'll be the only U.S. museum to show it. And it opens in October. The title actually came up was by the curators of the show, who were two artists, Danish artists, who saw this connection by these three artists who really had nothing to do with each other, but each was creating a unique vocabulary for their painting, which when you see them all together makes a lot of sense. And Cafe Dolly, sort of, they have so many different references to it, but one of them is to Dolly the sheep that was cloned. And this idea of replication and creating a hybrid these artists have all created a hybrid type of painting. So it's a funny title for a fascinating exhibition.
And there'll be a fascinating talk, I'm sure, because Julian Schnabel is coming to the museum, correct?
He sure is. He's been camping out in many cases. He loves our space. And yes, he's going to be giving a talk on October 12th.
Excellent. Lots more to talk about with Bonnie Clearwater. Stay with us on South Florida Arts Beat. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food, and our arts calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski, Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Now, we return to the conversation between our contributor Judith Bishop and her esteemed guest.
And I wish I were a camera. I could slice time like a knife, seeing stories in the faces and crystallizing life. I wish I were a camera. I wish it all.
We're back on South Florida Arts Beat with Bonnie Clearwater. She is the director and the chief curator at NSU Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale. Bonnie, the fall is going to be a big, big deal at your museum. In November, the main focus will be on photography, the collection of prominent art collector Marty Margulies. What type of things has he collected over the decades?
Well, Marty Margulies is one of the top collectors in the world. And we're fortunate that he's here in Miami and has made his collection accessible to the public. Besides the great paintings and sculptures and installations that he has, he's been a dedicated collector of photography, and not just contemporary photography, but a whole range historically. But a particular focus in the collection are works dealing with the American experience, starting with Lewis Hind's photographs from the early 20th century that are really part of the progressive movement to document the situation with child labor in America. And what I noticed as I was going through the collection was how much it was about looking at these situations of poverty, of the urban centers being reduced to decay, the spreading of suburbia. And there became a narrative that I realized that was coming out of Marty Margulies himself, is to realize his connection with this American experience, that the idea of these photographs showed us what it meant to be human and how to be more of a humanist as a result of these photographs. So what I realized that there was two narratives going on in this exhibition. It was Marty Margulies creating a narrative out of all these images about America, shaping a particular story about the American experience, but at the same time, this collection shaped him as a person. As he became more and more involved with these images showing poverty, showing labor, showing the Farm Services Administration during the Dust Bowl, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, I realized that these images were having an impact on the collector himself, making him more involved with community and helping community, particularly the work that he's done in Overtown or with the shelter for women,
Lotus House. Yeah.
So I was interested in this double narrative about collector shaping the collection, but the collection shaping him as well. So that is going to come out in this exhibition and the accompanying catalog.
That's a fascinating look, not only at the history of America, but the history of a prominent collector as well. Another huge show coming up in February, which will be, of course, the height of the winter season in South Florida, the Mexican modernists Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. That sounds fantastic.
Well, it is an amazing exhibition, and it's a collection that I have had experience with before. The Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera's are coming from the great Mexican collection of Jacques and Natasha Gilman, late collectors. But besides having this opportunity to bring these great works to South Florida, it's also giving us an opportunity to bring wider attention to a resource of our museum, the Stanley and Pearl Goodman Collection of Latin American Art. And in this case, their 20th century Mexican collection will be featured alongside these works from what is recognized as one of the greatest collections of Mexican modernism, the Gelman Collection. The Goodman Collection is part of a bequest to the museum and has been pledged to the museum. It's one of the top collections of Latin American art. So this exhibition is to bring awareness to the fact that the museum has this incredible resource. So juxtaposing the two collections will make this big statement. The book is going to be published by Rizzoli, so that also gives it great national and international recognition. But it's one of the collections that really is defining the museum. We have other collections as well that are unique. The Cobra Collection. We have the largest collection of Cobra, which is stands for Copenhagen, Brussels, and Amsterdam, the post-war avant-garde art movement. And we also have the William Glackens Collection, the largest collection of this early 20th century American modernists. And the show that we co-organized with the Parish Art Museum in New York and the Barnes Collection in Philadelphia is on view this fall at the Barnes Collection. So we have these very distinct areas, and it's really using our unique collections as a springboard to shape the exhibition program.
Several of these exhibitions sound like they will really document the 20th century from a social, political, and artistic perspective, but you're not neglecting the current century. There's some 21st century titans coming up as well. Tell us about Baldessari and some of the work that you're going to be showing of his.
Well, it's an exhibition called Aesthetic Decisions, and it's amazing to say, but this show is really over 20 years in the making. I had this idea when I was still in Los Angeles in the late 1980s. A photographer that I was very interested in, Judy Fiskin, did a series of photographs called Some Aesthetic Decisions. And it was really, you know, ideas that were current in LA at the time and have since spread globally. The idea of how are aesthetic decisions made? What are aesthetics? And John Baldessari was very instrumental in this kind of thinking, but it really does go back to Marcel Duchamp. And the exhibition will start with Duchamp's Ready Mades, which raises these questions, these philosophical questions. What is art? Where is the aesthetics? Who makes the judgment on what is an important work of art? So all of the artists in this exhibition explore the philosophy of aesthetics as the subject of their work. And there'll be a lot of works in there that might be a head scratcher as to, is this art or is it not, and why is it here? But that's exactly what the show's supposed to do.
Well, that's an entire other program. What is art? What isn't art? And why is it here? And why is it not here?
And who gets to say it's art?
Absolutely. Well, to some degree, you do, Bonnie Clearwater. Thank you so much for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat. For more information on the museum and the AutoNation Academy of Art and Design, log on to moafl.org or telephone 954-525-5500. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. Please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. South Florida Arts Beat returns in just a moment. Bell with you. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Coming up on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken renders A Word on Food, and our arts calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski, Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Now, contributor Charles Greenfield takes a look with his guest at an exciting season of events to be presented this fall by the FIU School of Music.
On the western border of Dade County, Florida International University South Campus is quickly emerging as a powerhouse, not only in South Florida, but throughout the region. With the Wertheim College of Medicine on the Medique campus at Southwest 107th Avenue, FIU has its feet squarely planted in the 21st century. In fact, the question of cultural arts is an important element in their growth, especially the music department. William Hipp, Dean Emeritus of the Frost School of Music at the University of Miami, is the appointed interim director of FIU's School of Music for 2014-2015. After 25 years of heading the UM Music School, including building its infrastructure and raising over $100 million, Dean Hipp has also served as interim dean at the University of the Pacific in California and the University of South Florida. In January of 2002, he was inducted into the Florida Music Educators Association Hall of Fame. FIU is a Research One institution with 54,000 students. The School of Music is housed in the Herbert and Nicole Wertheim Performing Arts Center, which contains 600 seats and a splendid Shantz concert organ. There are approximately 240 students pursuing BA and master's degrees, with a full-time faculty of 26 and an adjunct faculty of about the same number. Recently, I had the pleasure to talk to William Hipp about the FIU music program, the resident Amernay String Quartet, and the fall concert season on campus. Dean Hipp, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Good afternoon, Charles. It's great to be with you today.
Let's talk about FIU and its music school's mission statement.
Well, the short answer is that it's really to prepare students for future success in diverse professional pursuits that are related to music and music-related fields. The school is a place where innovation and tradition sort of merge and something different comes out at the end.
21st century technology, multiculturalism.
For many years, technology has been permeating just about every field in music. In fact, so many students come into college with pretty highly sophisticated technology in their experiences previously. So we pick it up from there. But we have to ensure that they all have a good basis once they get to us.
Now, there are two major music institutions in South Florida, certainly from a university standpoint, the University of Miami and FIU. And from your long experience at UM, could you compare and contrast the two institutions and where you see FIU's future?
This is an interesting challenge, Charles. I spent 288 months as dean at the University of Miami. I have spent 3 months as interim director of the School of Music at FIU. So I have quite a learning curve remaining. However, here it goes. FIU is a unique Research One, remarkably 54,000 student public institution, whereas UM is a private institution with about 15,000 students. FIU is celebrating its 50th anniversary. UM is, I think, 88 years old this year, so there are maturity factors there. Both institutions serve very specific, yet sometimes overlapping, purposes and needs. Music units are in some ways different and other ways similar. FIU, the School of Music, has an enrollment of about 240. UM probably has around 700, as memory serves me. FIU through the master's, UM through the doctorate. While the school, as you might expect, is contrast in enrollments, also means contrast in the number of faculty and types of degrees offered. The commonalities are that each school has some very fine, internationally known faculty who are totally committed to their students, their art, and their research.
Now, what are the musical programs offered to students at the FIU School of Music?
We have the Bachelor of Arts in Music, which is an interdisciplinary degree program. Music business is a part of one of the options there. We have the Bachelor of Music degree, which is the professional degree, performance, jazz, instrumental, and vocal, music technology, music education. We have Master of Music degrees in performance, technology, jazz, instrumental, and vocal, conducting, and music management. And we have a Master of Science degree in music education, which is also available totally online.
Now, you mentioned before about technology, obviously something where students come in very tech-driven. And FIU, obviously, with the music lab, with students wanting to compose their own music, even logistics, which they probably are interested in, and you mentioned music as a business. How do you get students to find the field that they really think will be helpful to them? There's so much there.
Our approach is, first of all, you have to offer the students a core of studies that gives them foundation to go in different directions. I mentioned technology because every music student, no matter if they're a violin player or a teacher, need a certain basic technology. Then once they have that foundation, they will get into more specialized technology depending on the direction they've selected. Every student also takes a basic course in the business of music so that they're equipped to be able to interpret contracts. They know what to do about copyright and so forth. So those are basics, and then it becomes more sophisticated as they progress up the ladder.
Well, that's very much in keeping with Dean Shelley Berg is doing at the University of Miami.
Sure, absolutely.
Now give us a brief outline on FIU's Wertheim Auditorium, its design, acoustics. It seems to me it's one of South Florida's best-kept secrets.
Well, the Herbert and Nicole Wertheim Performing Arts Center opened in 1996. The concert hall, which seats 600, contains a 74-rank Shands concert pipe organ that is considered to be one of the finest in the Southeast. The hall is what I would call a classic rectangular sound chamber with adjustable acoustics, which are very excellent, by the way. The hall is quite audience-friendly with great sight lines and plenty of space between rows of seats. We also have a lovely 150-seat recital hall next door to the concert hall. It's a perfect venue for student recitals.
Now, the Amarnay String Quartet is your on-campus quartet, and they're all teachers, of course. They have the teaching component, and they're significant to the university and the community. I believe they will play Russian composers on September 30th at Wertheim, and then on November 6th, Beethoven at the Miami Beach Urban Studios.
Yes. The Amarnay Quartet is quite extraordinary, and the school is very fortunate to have a resident quartet of this quality. At the last count, the quartet has something in the neighborhood of 60 concerts and master classes scheduled between now and June of 2015. Just a few examples include chamber music societies in Fort Worth, Texas, Cincinnati, Louisville, Portland, Naples, Florida, San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, plus concerts at a number of universities, including University of Pittsburgh, Princeton, and many more. The quartet is a wonderful ambassador for the school, the College of Architecture and the Arts, and for FIU. Locally, in addition to their on-campus performances, they have several concerts at Miami Beach Urban Studio on Lincoln Road and other venues. Each member of the quartet teaches about 8 private students and coaches chamber music in addition to their very busy rehearsal and concert schedule. So a couple of examples, the concert on September 30 with the fabulous pianist Margarita Shevchenko performing works by the Russian composers, which you mentioned.
And then Beethoven, I believe, in November.
Yes.
Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that on September 16th, the FIU Chamber Players perform, and on the 18th of September, the FIU Symphony Orchestra plays Weber. Chopin and Dvorak's Ninth. And I also hear conductor David Efron will conduct on October 23rd Wagner's Meistersinger Overture, the Brahms Violin Concerto in D Major, and Tchaikovsky's Fourth. A lot of fireworks this fall.
Oh, yes, a lot of fireworks. Yes, September concert by the FIU Chamber Players actually opens our season with the theme Chamber Music Through the Centuries. And will feature various sizes and configurations of chamber ensembles comprised of our performance faculty. The concert is produced by Robert Davidovici, internationally known violinist and member of the faculty. Then on October 9, the FIU Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Gregor Znovak, and guest composer Mark Gibson, who is at the University of Cincinnati, will perform the Weber, Chopin, and Dvorak. Then in October, our Orchestral Masterwork Series continues with Wagner, Brahms, and Tchaikovsky, including the Brahms Violin Concerto in D Major with Davidovici as soloist. The guest conductor for that will be David Efron, who has had an international career in symphonic and opera genres and who is currently chair of conducting at Indiana University.
And finally, FIU also presents faculty concerts, jazz, wind, and percussion, choral arts, a keyboard art series, and there's a Liszt festival in November with Kamal Gekic doing Beethoven's Third Piano Concerto with the FIU Symphony Orchestra.
There is assuredly a rich variety of high-quality music making going on throughout the academic year. Big band, small jazz ensembles, wind ensembles, the well-known keyboard art series, three choral ensembles, a fine opera program, concerts of early music, the guitar orchestra, and so forth. I advise listeners to go to our website. Just type in music at FIU, and it will pop up, and that contains our calendar.
Well, Dean William Hepp, I want to thank you so much for attending South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Charles. It's been my pleasure.
In its mission statement, the FIU School of Music states it is committed to preparing students for diverse careers in the music world of the 21st century with a focus on comprehensive musicianship, individualized instruction, the ensemble experience, and the use of the latest technology. Its concert series, both at Wertheim Auditorium and off-campus venues on Miami Beach, include both a strong dedication to classical music as well as jazz and avant-garde for its student musicians and outstanding local and regional artists and ensembles. For information, call their box office at 305-348-0496 or visit the website at music.fiu.edu. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is passion fruit. The genius of psychology, known simply by his last name, Jung, wrote, "A man who has not passed through the inferno of his passions has never overcome them." Which naturally brings me to passion, as in fruit. I was back in the dentist chair again, and my food-loving dentist, Gabriella, was soon conversing with me again about her latest food discovery. It was passion fruit. She hit me with a painkiller, and we waited for it to do its magic. She began in her measured cadences. "We have this Asian lady, possibly Thai, who lives across the street from us. She is old and quite short. We have been neighbors for 27 years, but we had not spoken until one day when she yelled at me, accusing my son of throwing a rock in her sidewalk area. So I leave her alone. But one day recently, I was walking and I saw this fruit on the ground. I did not know what it was. It seemed something like an apple, but different. I brought it home. When my husband returned from work, he picked it up and exclaimed, "Passion fruit! I have not seen this in too many years." So I went back and saw more lying on the ground. I gathered them. I am loving them now, too. I used the juice with water, lemon, and rum to make a drink I like. After she pulled the drill out of my mouth, I asked her if she had tried making a vinaigrette with the juices from the passion fruit. She brightened at the thought, and I could tell I had her baited. She might control the drill, but I have my ways, too. I told her a few of the ingredients in our passion fruit vinaigrette. I intrigued her more when I mentioned the dark roasted sesame oil we use. But then things got to an even more exciting place when I asked her if she could see making ceviche using the tartly complex juice that passion fruit displays. She stuck some suction device in my craw and said, "Every Christmas I make shrimp ceviche tostadas. My family attacks it like piranhas. I'm going to take a video of it next Christmas. It's the first thing that disappears from the holiday table. But maybe I will try to make it with passion fruit juice next time." I like this woman, despite the drills and such. Then she told me of how when she goes back home to visit in Mexico, they go to this little village, and from there they take canoes and go out into the waters in search of shrimp. It is like canoeing in the Florida Keys. It seemed even more exotic to me as I envisioned the locals hand-making moles, tortillas, tamales, and so many of the foods of Mexico I adore. She said, "It is the purest shrimp you could ever eat." She was making me hungry again. Passion fruit is a prolific vine fruit named for its exotic flower, which is imaginatively said to resemble the iconography, wounds, nails, crown of thorns, apostles of the crucifixion, a.k.a. the Passion of Christ. When ripe, they look like a handball that has had a serious workout on a gravel driveway. They come in various shades of red, lavender, dark purple, or yellow. If you can find them laying free on the ground, tell no one. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Yellowtail Snapper. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Jody Horn-Leschinski, Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Good afternoon, Jody.
Good afternoon. Are you looking forward to this wonderful weekend?
Yes, indeed, always. And I know Broward County has a ton of fun, exciting events going on.
We do, but before we get into the events, Ed, I really am proud to tell you that Broward Cultural Division is one of four recipients to receive a National Endowment for the Arts, a $25,000 Artworks grant to support the Broward Arts Journalism Alliance program, or as we're calling it, BAHA.
I read about that. Congratulations.
Thank you. And we'll be collaborating with the Gold Ring Arts Journalism Program and the Janklo Arts Leadership Program, which are both at Syracuse University. And the program will present arts journalism training for the area's content providers, professional broadcasters, media journalists, and other writers who post arts-related story content. And really, we're looking to explore innovative methods in local arts coverage for both the citizen writer and the professional writer. There will be three full-day sessions in October, January, and February, and they will take place at ArtServe, and the topics range from ethics in journalism, challenges of the arts coverage in the digital age, and so much more. And you can look on broward.org/arts for details about this exciting new program. And also, if you're interested, to please RSVP so that we know how many people will be attending.
Good luck with that exciting program.
Thank you. Broward Cultural Division will be presenting a application workshop called the Cultural Diversity Grant Program. And this is for nonprofit Broward-based organizations. The workshop will take place on Tuesday, September 2nd at 6 p.m. at the Broward County Main Library. There's no fee for the workshop, but we need you to RSVP, so please do so at broward.org/arts. We have another application workshop, and this time it's for individual artists who would like to apply for the 2015 South Florida Cultural Consortium Visual and Media Artists Fellowship. The workshop is called Demystifying the Process, and it will be held on Tuesday, September 9th at 6 p.m. also at ArtServe. These workshops generally run about 90 minutes, and please go to broward.org/arts to RSVP for this free workshop. So here's my question to the listeners out there. Are you driving for the arts? In other words, in the state of Florida, there are so many specialty license plates to choose from, but when you choose a specialty license plate, you're not only showing your support, but you're also making a financial contribution to your favorite cause, and hopefully your favorite cause is the arts. And the state-of-the-arts license plate, which was first introduced in 1995, has raised more than $1.3 million for Broward Cultural Division. And we've also been number one in sales for the entire state. And the funds that we raise are earmarked for arts programming. So again, I ask you, are you driving for the arts? If you purchase a state-of-the-arts license plate, $20 is returned back to Broward Cultural Division, and your $20 is tax deductible.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. So this weekend, we do have so many events coming up. In art, Cadence Pop-Up Gallery in Fat Village takes a look at a piece of Fort Lauderdale's built history through a designer's perspective. Join the artists for the house built by King as they shine a light on the timeline, details, sustainability, craftsmanship, and evolution of Fort Lauderdale's oldest structure, the Stranahan House, which is also on the National Register of Historic Places. The amazing Vorstek Kubasta, a showcase of his pop-up and illustrated children's books, is now on display at the Viennese Museum of the Modern Book located at the Broward County Main Library. The exhibition celebrates the centennial of Kubasta's birth and showcases more than 100 of his pop-up and children's illustrated books. On Saturday, renowned dancers and choreographers Agatha Wright and Isabelle Bienvenue fuse their backgrounds in contemporary and classical dance to create the originally choreographed work, Patina, a series of dance vignettes influenced by the classic figure paintings of Dana Stabulnice, now on display at the Guild 545. Tonight, Cinema Paradiso in both Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood presents a 2012 Japanese anime film called Road to Ninja, Naruto the Movie. Naruto, by the way, is a Japanese series about an adolescent ninja who constantly searches for recognition. The Museum of Discovery and Science and AutoNation IMAX Theater presents two films, Island of Lemurs, Madagascar 3D, the incredible true story of nature's greatest explorers, and Journey to the South Pacific, a breathtaking IMAX 3D adventure to the lush tropical islands of remote West Papua, where life flourishes above and below the sea. This weekend, the Hard Rock Live offers two British hard rock legends. On Friday, Saul Hudson, better known by his stage name Slash, and former lead guitarist of Guns N' Roses, and then on Sunday, Deep Purple, the English rock band formed in 1968, performed their hits.
Wow, that's going back.
It is. I don't want to tell you how old I was.
Oh.
Now through September 7th, City Theater's Shorts Gone Wild 2 is a collaboration with Island City Stage and performed at Empire Stage in Fort Lauderdale. Shorts Gone Wild 2 explores social, personal, and political issues at the heart of South Florida's LGBT and progressive communities. Broward Stage Door Theater presents two theatrical hits this weekend. In Theater 1, Butterflies Are Free, and in Theater 2, What's New Pussycat, the soundtrack of an era. There's one more event that I wanted to mention that Broward Cultural Division is involved with, and it's called Fun Day on the Runway. It's not our event, but it's an event, it's one of a series of events taking place on the South Runway, which is the brand new runway at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport. And they will have food trucks and entertainment, children's activities, and aviation exhibits. And it's on Saturday, September 6th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's free admission and parking. But Broward 100, Celebrating the Art of Community, will be out there. That is our centennial celebration. We will be there with a booth and with all sorts of tchotchkes that we're going to hand out. So we hope to see you listeners out there and come visit us. Say hello to me. And I'll be sitting in the booth. So, Ed, I expect to see you come on out. And if you want to buy a T-shirt, we're selling Broward 100 T-shirts. You can wear your art or wear your history, however you want to look at it.
Now, Jody, when can we start talking about Broward's centennial?
Well, Broward's centennial will be kicking off in October of this year, and it's a year-long celebration, and there is so much packed into the year. I can't even begin to tell you, but you can go to our website. It's a new website. It's Broward100.org. That's Broward100.org, and the 100 is the number, not the letters. And you can learn all about the four cornerstones of engagement, and we're looking for volunteers, and you can buy T-shirts and a whole bunch of other things. I think we have onesies and bibs and all sorts of fun stuff on there.
Well, we look forward to having you on the show to talk about that in mid-September.
I look forward to that as well. And just so your listeners remember, if you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, Broward County's complete guide to the arts. Never miss a thing. Get there.
Big thanks to Jody Horn-Leshinsky, Assistant Director at the Broward Cultural Division, for all of those events. Great weekend to you, Jody.
Thank you. To you, too.
Did you ever attend a boys' club or a boys' and girls' club here in Miami-Dade when you were a kid? If so, they'd like to hear from you. The Boys and Girls Club of Miami-Dade is planning an amazing reunion for its alumni in early 2015, and they want you to be there. What a great opportunity to reconnect and see your old friends and coaches from years past. If you're interested, call Arthur Hernandez at 305-446-9910, extension 13, or email alumni at BGCMIA, as in Boys and Girls Club of Miami, BGCMIA.org for more information. That number again, 305-446-9910, extension 13. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Judith Bishop, Charles Greenfield, Norman Van Aken, and Jody Horn-Leshinsky. Please call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at 1 o'clock, we'll feature a special holiday presentation, Future Work from NPR, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend and a great holiday, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye and joy.